Well, they got the fans out underneath the tarps. That's always a good sign. That means they're in the process of getting the tarp ready to pull off the field. Doesn't look like there's going to be BP, though, in the ballpark today. But they're still scheduled to play tonight, Nebraska and Creighton. We'll have the coverage right here on 1620 The Zone with Nick and Connor right after we're done tonight. And I'll be moving over to Nebraska Public Media. This week's Zone deal is to Le Voltaire, a locally owned French restaurant serving the Omaha community for over 20 years. Unpretentious down-home cooking, serving classic French dishes, handcrafted cocktails, and more. The reason I'm telling you this...
That was weird.
What was that?
The phone just did that.
That was you.
Yeah.
That wasn't me. Anyway, the reason I'm telling you all of this is because the phone is interested in getting the two $25 vouchers, a.k.a. a $50 value, for only $25. But you can't use the phone to get it. You have to go to the internet, which I understand nowadays you can use the phone to get. Go to 1620thezone.com starting this Friday morning at
9
for the Zone deal of the week to Le Voltaire. Before we get into revenue sharing and college football, I was alerted to something earlier in our comment section, our always prestigious YouTube comment section. Josh sending a message saying Malachi Coleman posting on X, that's Twitter, hinting at transferring eyeball emoji. So, I did a little looking. Here's what I have found. Yes, Malachi Coleman, about a half hour ago, tweeted out a screenshot of it. It's like old school typewriter paper with small little letters that say, trust in new beginnings. Trust in new beginnings. Josh, and I'm guessing... because it's reached our comment section, it's probably freaked out people on the message boards, that this means that Malachi Coleman, because there is still time left to get into the portal, is going to do just that. Now, I have no other intel. I will just give you anecdotal information. The previous tweet from Malachi Coleman's Twitter handle, which came after the spring game, was a retweet of a comment saying, nice nugget from Matt Rhule during the spring game broadcast when he was up in the booth. Said Malachi Coleman is up to 218 pounds. While he didn't play in the scrimmage, Coleman looks fantastic when I saw him on the field. So he was retweeting an observation of seeing Malachi on the field and something positive that Matt Rhule said in the booth. Now, does that mean anything? I don't know. It probably means just as much as the previous tweet, but as of this moment, I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, don't freak out.
Don't freak out.
Chill out.
Don't freak out.
Take a chill pill.
Don't freak out, because there's plenty of other things to freak out about as we dive in to the NIL today. Oh, it's all legal now, kids.
Woo! Young John. Mexico Josh. Our buddy Jared.
Jared.
I miss that shirt.
Today in the NIL Today, some rather interesting news coming out of the meetings happening recently. Of course, the College Football Playoff Committee has been meeting down in Dallas. Well, some of the power brokers, including Power 5 conference commissioners and Charlie Baker of the NCAA and others, have apparently been meeting with the plaintiffs in one of the most important lawsuits against the NCAA that there has ever been, and that is the House, that would be the U.S. House of Representatives versus the NCAA, which argues that the NCAA is breaking federal law by placing any restriction on how athletes make money. Well, according to an article last night from Pete Thamel and Dan Murphy of ESPN, leaders of college sports are involved in, quote, deep discussions to reach a legal settlement that would likely lay out the framework for sharing revenue with athletes in a future NCAA business model. Yes, kids, we are talking about actual direct pay for play.
Oh.
The university's actually handling all of that. Now, there is a lot here, a lot of layers. And I'll give you my analogy here a little bit later on. But this case, the case in question, House versus NCAA, scheduled to go to trial in January. If the plaintiffs win, the NCAA and its schools could be liable to pay more than $4 billion in damages. Sources stress, and this according to the ESPN article, that while no deal is imminent, details about what a multi-billion dollar settlement could look like are expected to be shared with campuses in the near future. The settlement would provide legal relief, some legal relief, and that's a key differential here, some legal relief for a college sports industry that's been peppered by lawsuits. It could also serve as a piece to formulating a more stable future. With the settlement expected to cost billions in back pay for former athletes, it would also likely require the NCAA and conferences to agree to a system for sharing more revenue with some of the players moving forward. So, what have they been talking about? So they're trying to get a settlement. They don't want this to go to court. They want to try to figure out something in terms of, okay, let's provide some kind of a framework where we can share the revenues. Well, according to the story, sources indicate that the top-end revenue share per school, once it's determined, would be in the neighborhood of $20 million annually. So, schools in the Power Five, for example, could budget up to $20 million, and that would be earmarked for the student athletes. Which student athletes? Well, let's find out. Whatever number is set by the settlement, again, going back to the story, individual schools will be able to opt in to revenue share up to that number. So the $20 million is not a, it's a salary ceiling, but it's not, it's like a salary cap. You don't have to reach the salary cap, but you can go under the salary cap. So schools could opt in for whatever amount they choose, but it could be in the neighborhood of up to $20 million annually. Last week, people were making a big to-do of Trev Alberts letting go of several members of the senior staff at Texas A&M, and one of the reasons why he gave to it was that they could be adding a new line item to their budgets. From the story, could be adding $15 to $20 million to their budgets for what he termed, he, Alberts, a new expense category to college athletics. In other words, a revenue sharing line. Now, here's the big question. There's many big questions. But from the story, what's uncertain for now are the mechanics of how this would work, and do schools buy out the NIL of their athletes, and how would Title IX be impacted? So, lot to unpack here, and there's other items I want to get to if we get a chance, and we've got Sipple coming up here in a few minutes. But what they're talking about here is some kind of a revenue share. And how did they reach the $20 million number? Well, apparently what happened was, and this is from a story from Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports, the per school figure was determined from an average of Power League athletic department revenues, ticket sales, sponsorships, etc., and it's expected to be the same for all schools despite a wide variance in resources. So they basically looked at, they did the forensic accounting of major schools and said, well, this seems like a fair revenue sharing number. Interesting that that was the number picked, because if you look at how most professional contracts are bargained, and by the way, we haven't even mentioned the part about collective bargaining. None of this can get off the ground unless the athletes have a voice in what transpires here, at least in my opinion. I don't know if the NCAA could just say, yep, we're going to do revenue sharing, and here's the number we're going to set. I have to imagine there's going to be folks, including Jeffrey Kessler, who is the attorney at large here for the plaintiffs in this case. I can't imagine that this would be allowed to start unless there was some kind of collective bargaining. In other words, who's to determine that that number is fair, right? Is it the NCAA? Normally, the fair number is negotiated between the owners and the players. You know, the revenue split in Major League Baseball. They determine that based on collective bargaining. Same in the NFL. Same in the NBA. Same in the NHL. If so far, nobody representing athletes has been involved in these conversations. So if we're going to start down the road of what fair and true revenue sharing is, in my opinion, the athletes have to have a voice. Because, in other words, the NCAA could just set whatever number they want, or this settlement could settle on any number they want. But when you look at it, and here's numbers from Dellinger's story, Ohio State's athletic department led the nation with $250 million in revenue last year. $250 million. So $20 million is not even 10%. I believe, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but most revenue splits that have been negotiated in the past have been a lot closer to 50-50 between players' associations and their professional leagues. Again, it's in the neighborhood. I don't know if it's exactly 50-50 or if it's a little bit less. But we're only talking, at least from an Ohio State perspective, that's less than 10% of their revenues would be earmarked towards revenue sharing. Now, there are a lot of other athletic departments, Nebraska's, Creighton's, a lot of others, they don't make $250 million. So what's a fair number to them? That's a question that has to be answered. At this point. So, you know, when you look at all of the things in this revenue sharing conversation, Title IX still has to be considered. How does that all work? Are we talking about, are you sharing revenue with all athletes? So in other words, that $20 million number, are you just going to take $20 million and divide it by all of your student athletes, regardless of sport, and give out the money equally? Or will there be, you know, percentages based on, well, revenue sports like football and men's basketball, those athletes are going to get a little bit more, and the non-revenue sports like track and gymnastics are going to get a little bit less? Again, these are things that probably need to be bargained at some point. And if the athletes don't have representation at the table, then what are we talking about here? Because let's face it. This has been a long process of just little piecemeal, you know, gradual, grudging moves towards what eventually is going to be the end game in all of this, and that is that, you know, major college athletics becomes semi-pro sports, for the lack of a better term. Is this another one of those little steps forward, or are we just going to cut to the chase here and the athletes are going to say, wait a minute, why is it only $20 million? You're getting X billion dollars a year for the men's basketball tournament, for Turner Sports and CBS. You're getting Big Ten Conference, for example, billions of dollars from three major networks just to carry your games. SEC is getting billions of dollars from ESPN just to carry those games. Why shouldn't the revenue split be higher? So to me, there's still a lot of questions here, and even if we get to a point where this case gets settled, to me, yeah, you're reaching the top of a staircase that we have been climbing for a long, long time. But all you have to do is look around the corner. There are a lot more stairs to go. And there are about three different staircases that you could take any one of those paths, and who knows where it's going to lead. Yesterday, certainly this news, significant, but it's just another step in a multi-step process that still has a bunch of layers of questions as to what's a fair split, which athletes are going to get it, which schools are going to be able to do it, how are you going to govern it, and especially if it's an opt-in program. If it's an opt-in program, there'll be schools like Ohio State that will opt into revenue sharing. There'll be other schools that opt in at a lower number or not at all. How is that fair? So it's, you know, I read the story, and it's certainly very fascinating. It's interesting that they're trying to settle this thing. But to me, I don't think it really settles a whole lot, because there's going to be other challenges out there down the road. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, Steve Sipple's going to join us here at Charles Schwab Field. It just rained a moment ago, but then it stopped again. And I do see blue sky behind me to the west, so maybe we'll still be okay for being on time.
It's beautiful here on 50th and Dodge.
Well, there you go. It's beautiful on 50th. Let's move the stadium to 50th and Dodge. Let's play the game and be done with it. Steve Sipple joins us next on Sportsmanlike Conduct on 1620 The Zone.